Epigenetics is the study of how your behaviors and environments cause changes that affect the way your genes work. Unlike genetic changes, epigenetic changes are reversible and do not change your actual DNA sequence, but they change the way that your body reads your DNA. Your DNA is what you were born with. By understanding your genes, you can gain insights into genetically influenced health predispositions that can help you to personalize your exercise, diet, and supplement routines. Epigenetics is what you do with your genes. Epigenetics are the expressions of your DNA that are impacted by your daily lifestyle and your environment. These respective genes can be turned on and turned off through targeted lifestyle interventions, and you can actually test for changes in your epigenetics. Today, we're going to talk about how we can work with our genes to help us not age as quickly, help us to stay healthy for life, and how our genes can actually help us to understand how we relate to our colleagues, our spouses, and our children. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show. A podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus, you'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. If you've been struggling to feel your best and feel like that food, sleep, relaxation, none of it is truly working, maybe you need to up your game with some infrared light and negative ion therapy. Infrared light penetrates deep into your body, going through your skin to muscles, nerves, and bones. Infrared light then helps to boost local circulation, bringing oxygen and anti-inflammatory molecules, as well as flushing away toxins. Therefore, infrared heat has been shown to reduce muscle pain, joint pain and stiffness, arthritic pain. It also helps to reduce stress and fatigue and supports the immune system. Negative ions act as attractors to bacteria and allergens in your environment, and they can help to inhibit free radical oxidation as well as reduce exposures to heavy metals, viruses, and other harmful elements, and can help to balance the body and the mind. The amethyst biomat is specifically designed to help provide infrared light as well as negative ions by electrically charging a mat full of amethyst crystals. It truly is an amazing experience to lay on a biomat. I have one as well as the tourmaline and amethyst pillow, and they have become part of my daily relaxation routine. If you want to get one of your very own amethyst biomats, head to lindsayelmore.com/biomat and you can be on your way to relaxation and less stress and fatigue throughout your day. Head to lindsayelmore.com/biomat to shop now. Dr. Erica Gray is the co-founder and chief medical officer at Toolbox Genomics and My Toolbox Genomics. As a pharmacist, having had years of experience in both alternative and allopathic medicine, Dr. Erica is passionate about integrating the two modalities to inspire people to live healthier lives. She believes that helping people understand who they are from their genes out will help provide them with the tools to understand how they interact with their environment and the role that this interaction has on their health. Dr. Erica Gray, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thanks so much for having me. I love being back with you again.
I know. So for those of you who, I mean, honestly, none of our listeners are going to know this, but Erica and I went to the same pharmacy school. She was a year younger than me, and we really hit it off right away because we were both kind of the weird, crunchy granola pharmacists that were like, why don't we just sit around and study like some herbs, you know, and really discuss how do you actually raise healthy children and not be destined to be sick your whole life. So I know, I haven't talked to you in so long. It's so good to talk again.
I know. You were the one pharmacist was like, wait a second, you had a home birth? We gotta talk.
We gotta talk. Yes, yes. You posted photos of your home birth of your second child. And I was like, I need to know this woman better. So, and now you have taken on a role as the chief medical officer of Toolbox Genomics. And today we're gonna be talking all about genes and what they are for us, what they do for us. And epigenetics is kind of one of those new emerging fields of health and wellness that I don't think a ton of people know a lot about it. So I looked up the definition. So epigenetics is the study of how behaviors and environment affect the way that your genes work. And so epigenetics is not actual true genetic changes. It's reversible. It's fluid. It doesn't change your DNA sequence, but it kind of changes the way that your body reads your DNA. So talk to us first. Give us a crash course in what are genes, what is genetics, what is genomics, and why do our genes matter?
All right, lots to unpack. So here we go. Stop me if there's anything that I'm going too fast on. So sure. My dad is a civil engineer. And so when I was a little girl, he would take me out with him and it was super fun. But we always had to stop at the dang city first to get the blueprints. And it was like the most boring part because you had to do all this research. And one day I was like, can we just skip this step because it's really boring? He's like, no, because the blueprints tell me where's the sewer? Where's the water? Where am I going to design this building? And without it, like, it's just going to be this free-floating building. Nobody has any instructions of what to do. I was like, oh my gosh, our DNA is that blueprint. So we are all born with a very unique blueprint that is going to signal to our body what color hair, what eye color, how do we respond to carbohydrates, proteins? Do we have predispositions to certain diseases? All of that is all set. It's that magic blueprint. But you have to remember, your genes are not your destiny. So it is in your power to change that expression. And that's what Lindsay was talking about with the epigenetics. And so we'll come back to that in a second. But what's absolutely fascinating is just like on a blueprint, you put down elevations and you list, how far something is or how high it is. Our body does the exact same thing with four letters, an A, a C, a T, and a G. And depending on how they go together, depending on how they're supposed to go together, but don't go together, is going to send different signals, how to make proteins, how our receptors change. So receptors are homes where we have hormones that come in and sit in them, or neurotransmitters like dopamine or serotonin. And all of those are governed by genetics. And so then it really becomes up to us to get our own blueprint so we can say what the heck is going on underneath the hood. And what can we do about it? What do I need to be aware of as an individual that is unique to me? So genes are those blueprints. Got to think about the expression of it, which we're going to talk about in a second. And then when we talk about genetics and genomics, so genetics is like the recipe, right? So both Lindsay and I enjoy cooking. And if I were to substitute coconut oil for olive oil in a recipe, it's going to change the taste a little bit, but fundamentally the recipe is going to stay pretty well intact. like limes and lemons. Genomics is more like the kitchen. So if I don't put an oven into my kitchen, my ability to cook is really compromised. And so when we're talking about genomics, we tend to talk about chromosome abnormalities. This is where we get into things like Down syndrome. You are missing a chromosome, you have duplications, all of those are much, much bigger. What we are talking about on the genetic side is a single nucleotide polymorphism, or a SNP. It's one change in that base pair. That's it. So those letters I was talking about, there's a change. And usually there's an evolutionary reason for it. The what we call the wild type or the ancestral, there was a reason we needed it. And then we moved away from that area. It put some pressure on us. And so now we had what we call an allele, a base pair change.
Mm-hmm. So we have these changes that happen in our genes. And I think when people hear genetic mutations, it can sound very scary, but we all have these single nucleotide polymorphisms. And so what is the real definition of like a gene mutation?
So it's something that what we would call is deleterious. It's something that is going to lead to something that is adversely going to affect your life. And there is no changing it. Like, so some of these enzyme abnormalities that you can have where like, for like the acetyl-CoA pathways that babies are born with, they're congenital. This is where those mutations come into play because they're serious and you can only do really supportive care, so to speak. But I don't like to use mutations. I like to use the word variant because it's just a change. And so a lot of times, I mean, like there's a t-shirt out there that says, "Forgive me, I'm a mutant for the MTHFR gene." That's just one gene out of millions.
And it's the most genetically diverse gene in the entire human code is the DNA that codes that enzyme. Like, we're all mutants. There are literally thousands of different ways that gene can get coded.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be passed on, right? So if that happens in the sperm or the egg, that's how it becomes transgenerational, or it can happen in your lifetime because of certain exposures to certain pesticides, toxins, chemicals, et cetera.
Okay, so talk to us a little bit about how do we work with our genes? Because we may have listeners here who have found out that they have a genetic predisposition to maybe Alzheimer's disease or breast cancer or, you know, any other, like you said, genes govern how we respond to carbohydrates. And so there may be some genetic markers like, hey, you're more at risk for diabetes. So how do we work with our genes instead of trying to fight them, which I think happens a lot among the Down syndrome, you know, children who are diagnosed with Down syndrome, it used to be considered just like this horrible thing. And now we have children that thrive and live extremely long and rich and full lives. So how do we work with our genes instead of against them?
Yeah. And even something like Huntington's, you know, Huntington's is really kind of like that ultimate, I think what a lot of people feel is the kiss of death. With motor function loss, but so I'm going to answer your question, but I just got to share this new research. There's a new paper that just came out where they were talking about a thiamine transporter there's an issue there. And so thiamine is very, very important in the brain, helps us metabolize carbohydrates, responsible for so many different enzymatic reactions. And what they found was that people who had Huntington's had lower levels of thiamine and biotin in their cerebral spinal fluid, their CSF. And if they gave them more and they were actually able to kind of overwhelm that transporter and get it into the brain, their symptoms improved. So even there, you know, that's another example of working with your genes. But I think that the three areas we really, it's fascinating for us to learn more about our genes. So first thing is you have to test, not guess, because if you don't know that blueprint to you, and remember, it's a reference guide, there you get back so much information. we really try to distill it down and make it manageable, but there's just still a lot of information. So it's like, it's something you put on your shelf and you pull it down when you have a question, you read a new study, you hear something new from Lindsay. It's like, then you go and you check your genetics. Does this make sense about what my report says? So exercise, diet, and sleep. Those are three fundamental areas that impact literally every single part of our life. If you want to live well and have a good quality of life, those are the three areas you've got to have dialed in. But our genetics are going to tell us if we have fast or slow twitch muscles. They're going to tell us if we do better with carbohydrates or protein. They're going to tell us how we do with saturated and unsaturated fats. Mm-hmm. Because some people are just more sensitive. So I'll give you an example. APOA2, more sensitive to saturated fat, specifically the dairy kind. So if you have that and you decide to go on a keto diet or more of a higher fat diet, don't use dairy because you're probably going to gain weight. So it's like these little tweaks where this is working with the gene, because if you go, oh, this is great, I'm going to eat all this dairy and all this cheese, you're working against your genes, and now you're going to actually undo all that hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And then exercise, fast twitch, slow twitch, or endurance. You know, are you more of an endurance athlete? So one of our first CEOs had fast twitch muscles, but he went out and ran marathons, didn't realize this. And so he ended up with shin splints all the time. Turns out he should have been sprinting. He should have been doing those HIIT type exercises. Meanwhile, there's me going, 4-minute workouts. This is awesome. This works so much better. You know, with two kids, come to find out I have all these endurance muscle, endurance genes, slow twitch muscle fibers. So it's like me going out and doing a HIIT exercise isn't going to do a thing. And I was just kidding myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting that type of information is really going to help you make more thoughtful choices, because now you have a lens that you can always ask the question, does this make sense for my genetics? Does this make sense for my blueprint? Because if it doesn't, it's probably going to undermine what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit about, like, you call it gene style. What is a gene style?
It was a term that we came up with because everyone has a different, like a fashion sense, right? You can always point, especially for women, you know, like they have a certain way of dressing. And I remember in pharmacy school, like Lindsay was the best dress.
Oh, thank you.
Ever.
Now it's like yoga pants or it's not happening, you know? Thank you. I appreciate that. And pharmacists in general, if you are in a hospital and you want to find the clinical pharmacist, you find the best dressed person on the floor because we're all wearing regular clothes. I don't know why pharmacists never adapted wearing scrubs. Like, why did we not go that route instead of high heels all day? But that is a story for another podcast. Different story.
So like I could talk to friends and people would be like, oh yeah, Lindsay always dresses this way. Well, that was Lindsay's fashion style. But on the inside, you have your own gene style. So what does that look like to you? And I think really just like we develop style guides for businesses and for websites, you need a gene style guide to who you are, where your predispositions, because that's where you're going to focus. So like for me, type 2 diabetes, blood sugar control, insulin resistance, that's where I light up genetically. Autoimmune conditions, there's nothing. And if you look at my family history, it completely supports it. Mm-hmm. So for me, I know like intermittent fasting, watching the carbs, not eating after 6, it's really important because it's not just good for my body, but it really works with my genes and my gene style.
Mm-hmm. So you're able to kind of take a look and decide, of all the health and wellness advice that we get, one of the biggest problems is everybody just tries to make it so generic. Like, hey, everybody gets the same advice, but it doesn't work, you know? And I love your story about slow twitch versus fast twitch muscle, something I've absolutely never heard of that may make you like, no, actually running a marathon is going to be potentially harmful for
you. And greater risk of injury.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a greater risk of injury. So talk to us about some of the most important genes and how it can impact your life. And so I think MTHFR is one that comes to mind, the BRCA1 mutations for breast cancer. And then you also brought up the methyltransferase known as COMT. So talk to me about those three genes and how it can really impact your life.
Yeah. So I call the MTHFR gene the Kim Kardashian gene because everyone wants to know what it's up to, what's going on, what, you know, and what is their status. And so, like we had talked about earlier, it is only one gene. The reason it has gotten so much notoriety is because having the correct active form of folate that can go into your cells. So again, working with your genes, because remember, when we consume foods, behind the scenes, our body is converting it and breaking it down into a form that the cells can use. And so if you think about it, like you have a door that needs to open, but it can only open with the right form. And so what a lot of these genes are doing is producing the enzymes to put it into a form so that door can open. And when that door opens, all the magic happens. So folate is so important for DNA synthesis, for rapidly dividing cells, for producing neurotransmitters, for helping with detox pathways, and also for recycling homocysteine back into methionine. We know homocysteine is really inflammatory for the brain, for the blood vessels, for our uterus, if we're trying to get pregnant. So I think that's why it gets so much notoriety. But I actually think PEMT is even more important. It has to do with choline levels. And choline is another methyl donor. And so we'll tie it into epigenetics in a second. But if we don't have enough methyl groups, our body goes around and sticks methyl onto different molecules, onto our DNA, and it changes what happens. It changes the expression of it. So while our DNA never changes, what happens and what we can measure does change. So that's why these methyl groups are so important, but it also helps with membrane stability. It helps with our brain. It helps for our children as well. So I love looking at PEMT. The BRCA gene has gotten tons and tons of publicity as well, especially with Angelina Jolie. There are about, if I remember correctly, like 20 different BRCA genes. 23andMe looks at three. So just because you're negative for those three does not mean that there aren't other BRCA genes in the wings that you need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's the expression of it. So if you are not taking good care of yourself, and Lindsay and I were talking about this, like you can overeat, undersleep, and underexercise every gene. Mm-hmm. So it is the same thing with the BRCA gene.
And so, I think under detoxify just about anything, you know, like not truly focusing on, do I have mold in my home? Am I able to take detox baths at least 3 days a week? Like you can under detoxify your genes absolutely. As well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. If you have a trashy gut, your liver's not going to work because of the portal vein and how they communicate to each other. I mean, so much of that also will play into this as well. And those toxins can play a big role in the expression. But with the BRCA gene, when Angelina Jolie got out there and said, well, now I won't have cancer, the pharmacist and the functional pharmacist in me said, but wait, your environment is so, so important on this. And so it's not a carte blanche for you. And so if you have that information, all you need to know is you need to take more care of yourself. You need to do those thermographies. You need to be more vigilant, do a Dutch test, do a hormone test. So, again, helpful information, but definitely not a death sentence. And then COMT is the reason it's my favorite is because it plays such, so it plays a role with estrogen detoxification. It's in the liver, but it's also in the brain. So you've got three different types of people. And so it's really like the Goldilocks, too much, too little, just right. But if you are a fast COMT metabolizer, you're going to break down that dopamine, epinephrine, norepinephrine much faster. You're going to be more prone to addiction. You like a rapidly changing environment. So when you work out, if you have to do the same workout 5 days in a row, you're going to want to shoot yourself and you're going to quit because you like a dynamic changing environment. You may switch from task to task because you like that, but they may not help you get your work done. Mm-hmm. Conversely, you could, and you have a higher pain tolerance. Slow COMTs are going to be more anxious. They really tend to be very narrow focused. So they're the people who like to get on and will Google something and go, oh, I'm going to die. This is for sure what's going to happen. They will catastrophize. Stress makes their anxiety even worse. They have a lower pain tolerance. And so knowing what you are can be absolutely critical, not only for your own personal worldview, because that is your knee-jerk worldview reaction of what's going to happen when you're not cognitively engaged. Mm-hmm. It can affect your relationships. My husband's a slow COMT. I'm an intermediate COMT. So when he's like, oh, no, that's too much. Write it down. And intermediate COMT is like, come on, we should be able to do this. Mm-hmm. I have to recognize it's overwhelming his slow COMT status and it's stressing him out. So mm-hmm. it's not something fundamentally wrong with him. It's just his way of working with the world.
Yes, absolutely. We are all built very differently and it is reflected in our genes. And so I love that how you're saying like, look, simply knowing your genetic status can actually make you a better partner, a better parent, because you're going to see it's actually just hard coded into them that this is going to be a person who is more anxiety prone or who is more laid back and chill, whatever it is. And, you know, it's interesting what you said about Angelina Jolie and her saying like, now I won't have cancer because I had this double mastectomy at a young age. And I remember back when the BRCA gene first started making headlines and my mother was working at a surgeon's office and they did a ton of breast cancer. They did, you know, needle biopsies and lumpectomies and mastectomies and the whole nine yards. And I remember talking with one of the physicians about like, are you going to start doing these preventative double mastectomies? And he was like, absolutely not. And I was like, why not? And he said, because they don't have cancer. You're assuming that because of your genes, you're destined, but it's going back to where we started. Your genes are not your destiny. Your genes are not at all your destiny. And so we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. SomaVedic is the ultimate EMF protection. It is designed on the principle of controlled release of energy from precious and semi-precious stones. This allows you to create a coherent field covering more than 2,800 square feet. That's right. It forms a bubble of protection against electromagnetic frequencies, including 4G and 5G, Wi-Fi, and your cell phones, and it protects against oxidative stress and free radicals. The SomaVedic Ruby and the Vedic models are there to help repair cellular damage from non-native EMF exposure. It helps the body to repair itself from the harmful effects of EMF. The balancing effects reach a 100 feet radius in all directions. And that's not all. SomaVedic can also help to harmonize your water. SomaVedic creates structure in your water that helps it to benefit our bodies more. By creating hexagonal patterns, water is reorganized into its natural state, just like nature intended. You can head over to www.somavedic.com and use the code LKE to save 10% off. That's www.somavedic, that's SOMAVEDIC.com and use the code LKE to save 10%. Be sure to shop using the code so that Soma Vedic knows that we sent you. And now, let's get back to the show. Talk to us a little bit about how do we take our genes and how do we take our epigenetics and go, this is where I am, this is where I want to be, and how do we get there?
So once you've got your DNA results, then I think getting the epigenetics is fabulous because epigenetics is really the next level DNA testing, because now we're measuring what is actually happening with the methylation. So I talked about the methylation, putting those methyl groups on. Well, it turns out that you can put the methyl groups on. And this is, by the way, totally normal. It is dynamic. It is happening all the time in our bodies at this very moment. So certain genes, we want them off, like tumor suppressor genes. We actually want those turned on because we want to suppress tumors. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that as we get older, those genes start to get more methylated. So now they get turned on. So it's this dynamic process. So now what happens is we actually can measure your methylation status of these different genes. It's a score. It goes from 0 to 1, and 0 being the least methylated, 1 being the most methylated. So in times of pregnancy, you're going to be, all of those gene expressions are going to change. When the astronauts went out to space and they said, oh my gosh, his DNA changed. No, it didn't. It was the expression of it. It was the epigenetics of it changed. When we undergo trauma or significant stress, all of that is changing. So what I do is I take the DNA and I say, okay, what is my gene style? What does my health trajectory look like? What's going to be the best type of exercise? What do I need to be aware of with the diet? And then sleep. And then where are my predispositions that I need to keep an eye out for? Then I'm going to do functional lab testing, right? So for me, it's going to be insulin, a hemoglobin A1C, maybe even an adiponectin. So I know what's going on for me. Then I can put on the epigenetics, because the epigenetics is going to be affected before we can even measure it in the blood. And so if my inflammation genes are turned on, or I am aging faster than my chronological age, then it means that I need to take action right now, even though my lab work looks good. If my lab work doesn't look good and my epigenetics look even worse, it means it's really critical that I do some major interventions right now and get that fixed.
Okay, so let's say that somebody finds out that, you know, their labs are looking okay, but they've got this genetic predisposition. What interventions do you recommend on the regular for people?
So a good methylated B vitamin is really, really important. So when we were talking earlier and we were saying, you know, there's a lot of, you know, people with the MTHFR variant. So taking folic acid, you just pick up your bottle, your supplement bottle, take a look. It will just say folic acid. If it's the activated form, it's going to say L-methylfolate, 5-methyltetrahydrofolate, 5-MTHF. Those are all the active forms.
So, and then it'll have the folic acid equivalents, which I think is super confusing. So it's just a labeling requirement for supplements that they have to tell you what the folic acid equivalents are. So you may see like the L-methylfolate and then the FEA after that. But if you're getting that methylated B vitamin, that's what you want. Yeah.
Yes. And remember, they all work together. And one thing I didn't mention is that MTHFR is a thermolabile enzyme. So it's really affected by heat is what it is. And riboflavin, which is another B vitamin, actually helps stabilize that enzyme. So some people have said it's not a folate deficiency. If you have that variant, it's a riboflavin deficiency. So having a really good B complex that is activated, number one. Number two, you've got to have good gut health. So you need to make sure that your pH in your stomach is low enough that you can absorb these B vitamins. You can break down your proteins and liberate your amino acids. maybe some butyrate, maybe some L-glutamine. You know, this is where working with one of us is, it can be really, really helpful, because everything gets started in the gut. And we want to make sure you can absorb your nutrients, because that's also going to be the most cost-effective way for you to help yourself, getting really good sleep. And then knowing your, as I said, COMT status, because you're going to get an idea of how you manage stress. And stress is that sneaky little thing that throws you into the parasympathetic into sympathetic. Now you're running from the tiger. You're not resting and digesting. And remember, social media, TV, our phones are all throwing us out of parasympathetic into that sympathetic overdrive and causing adrenal fatigue and cortisol overwhelm. So dialing in the gut, the stress, and the sleep, really, really important, because if you don't have those, any of those things going on, and you're not moving, by the way, you've got to get out and move. You don't need to go run a marathon. You don't need to be running doing massive weightlifting. You need to get off your butt and get outside and get under the sun. Super, super important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you would think that with as much research as we have out there, that there would be something more complicated, but we say it again and again and again on this show. It's about sleep. It's about stress. It's about what you eat. It's about how you eat it. And it's about how you move. And it's about how you detoxify. That is really the critical things that heal everything or throw everything out of balance. Because I firmly believe if one thing is broken, the whole system is broken. The body either heals everything or nothing is well. You know, you can't have it two ways. So you mentioned aging earlier. If you are looking like you are older than your chronological age, it can be a sign that you've got epigenetic problems. So how can our listeners slow down their aging?
So caloric restriction. So this is where intermittent fasting, and I want to be careful how I say the caloric restriction, because I'm not saying go out there and count your calories, because I want you to get really good, high quality food. Mm-hmm. I don't want you consuming processed empty calories, but eating within the time of day. So when it's light outside, eat. When it's dark, don't eat. Like, it's that type of simple stuff, because you want to eat with the circadian rhythm. So that is hugely, hugely important. Light and dark are going to be some of your biggest signals. In the morning, you need to get outside and get actual light onto your skin and into your eyes. No sunglasses, no sunblock, nothing. Because that's going to start setting that signal up for the day and tell your body, yes, it's day. You need to do all your day processes. And then at night, you got to put those blue light blockers on. You got to put them on your screens and you got to get off of them. Guilty as charged. It happens to me too.
We all
do it.
Spend way too much time on screens. We all do.
Exactly. Watch a sunset. Any of those things is going to signal to your SEN, your super Gaia nucleus. It's in the brain. Like, it is the master clock that is governing everything. And when you are out of sync with that, it signals to your body that you're broken. And when you're broken, you age faster. So food, light, dark, and movement in the right times and in the right quantities are really, really important, because those are going to be the ways you can age or slow down your aging the best. And it's a matter of fact. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I want to dive deeper into like this. I think what you're searching for is the suprachiasmic nucleus. There we go. We found it. That is where the brain circadian clock lies. And so you said it's yes, you got to get good food and good exercise and good sleep, but it's about the timing. And so, like, walk us through a day. Like, do you believe that there is an ideal time for human beings to wake up? Or do you think that there are different chronotypes? You know, I've heard people talk about, like, there are certain people that are genuinely genetically predisposed to stay up all night every night and sleep through the day. But talk to us about, kind of, in your research, what is kind of the best marching through the day?
So I think the best way to figure out what your chronotype is or who you are is go camping for about 3 days, because then you're going to actually see what is your natural circadian rhythm. Now, I recognize not all of us can do that, but if, like, bar none, that's the way to do it, because you will completely get reset. Now, if you can't, what most people say is getting up with the sun is really important. So, like, being up and outside by 7 a.m. Seems to be a good point, you know, especially with now that we're in winter. Of course, in the summer, you try to do it earlier. The other part, with as far as the chronotype, so yes, there are definitely genes that are going to predispose you to staying up later or getting up earlier. Very much you can see that, you know, when you talk to people. I would challenge anyone who, quote, stays up all night, if they would actually stay up all night, or they would go to bed as late as they do if they were not on the blue screen and if they were not eating or drinking something other than water. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times, because we get up later, then we stay in the blue lights, and then we're eating, we're actually increasing our cortisol levels and we're decreasing our melatonin. So we're not getting those sleepiness signals that we used to have. There are people who have fragmented sleep from a genetic perspective. Some people do have a predisposition to narcolepsy. So those will play into it. Some people naturally don't make as much melatonin. So could those people be those later chronotypes? Possibly. Absolutely. But I think when you strip a lot of the modern conveniences away, you will find that you are more aligned with the natural rhythms of the light and the dark than you realize.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I just have to give a shout out to caffeine right now, because caffeine, it's interesting. Caffeine's mechanism of action is it blocks a chemical constituent called adenosine. And adenosine is what makes you feel sleepy, in addition to melatonin. But adenosine really also is very important. And caffeine can block the action of adenosine for 4 hours in an adult, maybe 6 hours in an adult. In a little kid, caffeine can block the action of adenosine for 3 days. And so it's like, you give a kid a soda on Monday, they may not have the full potential of the cyclic nature of adenosine until Wednesday or Thursday. And that is astonishing to me. So when people say, like, really, truly don't drink caffeine after noon or 4 p.m. or whatever it is, it's because your body physically cannot produce one of the chemical messengers that is very important for telling you that, you know, you're ready to go to sleep. Now, I want to ask you one final question just about the ethics of genetic testing, because we have seen genetic testing be used in myriad of ways that were not necessarily disclosed to the people who had their genetic code used in this way. We see it in genetic genealogy and the way that genetic genealogy is used in criminal investigations. We saw genetic genealogy catch the Golden State Killer. But if you, I don't know that I want to know that my distant uncle is a serial killer or whatever. Like, so, you know, as the chief medical officer of Toolbox Genomics, like, how do you ethically approach the very sensitive information that your customers are sharing with you?
Ooh, so well stated. Really quickly, I want to go back to your caffeine for a second.
Yes,
so
please.
There's also slow caffeine metabolizers.
Oh, yeah.
So that long half-life that Lindsay was talking about, you can take that and lengthen it even further. And the majority of people are slow caffeine metabolizers. And the thing that I'll say is
I feel personally attacked right now. I may need to take a step back. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
I'm a slow caffeine metabolizer too. And this is if, by the way, if your detox pathways don't work, like you may be actually pushing that out even further, but that's a conversation for a different day. But there are people who will say, you said I'm a slow caffeine metabolizer. I can drink coffee right before I go to bed, but I would encourage people to actually track the type of sleep. Please don't use a wearable or something that uses Wi-Fi so that it's messing up your sleep at night. Like it's got to be something that you can shut off. It collects the data and then it can, you know, send it into the app or wherever when you wake up. But you can look at heart rate. You can look at deep sleep, REM sleep, slow wave sleep. And that is where you will see those changes with the caffeine.
And heart rate variability.
Yes.
Which is so important.
So important. Or if you're an athlete, how you're going to use caffeine judiciously to potentially up-level your workouts as well. Super, super important. So let's go back to the ethics. Your data from our perspective, and this has been our stance from day one, your data is your data. You get to call the shots. And that is to me the number one way that you screen any company. So this is what you should hear. We protect your privacy from start to finish. Everything gets de-identified. So you are literally just a number when you hit the lab. Nobody knows who you are. Who you are and your data are stored separately in HIPAA compliant secure servers. So it's only when we query the information are you brought together to create a report. You make sure that the lab destroys your sample after a certain period of time. You can ask that your raw data is destroyed at any time. You need to consent to allow a company to actually process your information. So you know that, yes, I am actually consenting. I am agreeing to share this information with you. And then the big question is, what happens with the data afterward? And this is what Lindsay was talking about, is that there have, you know, been some commentaries very recently about, oh, by the way, did you know what's happening behind the scenes? And pick up the phone and call the company and say, what do you do? What are your plans with my data? So for us, we don't do anything with your data. We just keep it in that secure server. Unless you tell us to destroy it, it just hangs out there. And that's really how I think it needs to be. I think there's a lot of valuable information in the data, especially when you start aggregating it. You can help society, you can publish, but it's your data. You must consent. And I actually would go a step further and say, if the company is going to make money, you should make money on it. It's like, you should get a portion of it if you're going to share your data for the benefit of science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that that is totally fair. And we see a long history of abuse where that has not happened. I mean, Henrietta Lacks is basically the most exploited woman in medical history, and her family has fought tooth and nail to get nothing, you know, to just not get any recognition of the contributions that her cell line transformed modern medicine, and it was taken without her consent, and she was never compensated for it. You know, it's really, really a shame. It's the same reason that we pay people to be in clinical trials, which has its own set of ethical stuff that we could talk about, but we unfortunately are completely out of time. Erica, it's been such an honor to talk to you. Listeners, if you would like to leverage your DNA and your epigenetics, test, don't guess, head to lindsayelmore.com/toolboxgenomics. That's lindsayelmore.com/toolboxgenomics. And you can save 10% on your test kit. And through the holiday season, they are also offering 20% off of your second kit. So head to lindsayelmore.com/toolboxgenomics to get started. Erica, it's been such an honor. Dr. Erica Gray, thank you so much for coming in and being a guest today on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much for having me, Lindsay. It was like old times.
I know. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support the Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag @LindsayElmoreShow and help us bring the pod to more people.